Insightful podcasts by informative hosts. Insights into Things, a podcast network.
Welcome to Insights into Entertainment, a podcast series taking a deeper look into entertainment and media. Your hosts, Joseph and Michelle Whalen, a husband and wife team of pop culture fanatics, are exploring all things from music and movies to television and fandom.
Welcome to Insights in Entertainment. This is episode 87, A String of Unfortunate Goodbyes. I am your host, Joseph Whalen, and my spooky and spirited co-host, Michelle Whalen.
Nice.
How you doing today, sweetheart?
I'm doing good. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary, sweetheart. So, yes, today is Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
It is our anniversary.
Yes.
It is 8 days after Madison's birthday.
Correct.
It is 11 days after Sam's birthday.
Correct.
So we have a very busy
yes,
October.
Yes, October's a very busy October.
It is. And this show's a very busy show.
Yeah.
We were not on last week.
Right.
So we have a lot of stuff to catch up on. We did have a good time at the Pennsylvania Renaissance Fair.
We did. We last did.
Weekend. It worked out very well.
Kind of nice feeling a little normal. You know?
Yeah, it was a great venue. Everything was outdoors. Mm-hmm. You could social distance. You could, be as careful as you needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But still have a good time.
Yeah, yeah. And that's kind of what I think a lot of people need right now.
So between that and the Pumpkin Fest that we went to the week before, good time of year to get out and do some of the things that we normally do.
Right, not too hot, not too cold.
And you can stay safe doing it.
Right, right.
So good stuff, good stuff. But today we do have a very busy show, and our Disney detective, we're going to be talking about changes to the queue for Star Wars Rise of the Resistance. We have some more unfortunate layoffs at Disney. Then the question of whether annual passes will be going away at Disney parks. And more bad news for Disneyland Paris closing because of a surge in Corona.
Mm-hmm.
France. Then in our Tales from the Edge of the Galaxy, we'll talk about the new Star Wars Holiday Special and some of the crossover aspects of it. Then we have some Mandalorian news here. We just watched last night the premiere of Season 2.
Yeah.
Episode 1.
We'll and talk about that, I'm sure.
It was awesome.
Yes, it was.
But we have a little bit of news on that as well. And then in our entertainment news, Marvel may be retconning the MCU to accommodate X-Men, which would be nice because they've been all over the place with X-Men. some Spider-Man 3 news everyone's been waiting for. And then we do get some unfortunate news. Mindhunter, a show that you and I both really enjoyed, is not coming back for a Season 3.
Right.
We'll talk about that. And a farewell to my favorite James Bond, Sean Connery. Then we'll finish up with our insightful picks of the week. Are we ready to get started?
Sure.
Okay. Well, before we get started, that hesitation was very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks.
Before we get started, I would encourage folks to subscribe to the podcast. You can get our video podcasts are listed as Insights into Things. Our audio podcasts are listed as Insights into Entertainment. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and Amazon. We'd also love to get your feedback. Are we doing a good job? What do you want us to talk about? What don't you want us to talk about? You can email us at comments@insightsintothings.com. We're on Twitter at @insights_things. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/insightsintothings. And on Instagram, we are at insightsintothings. And you can get links to all of our social media content and all of our videos and audio recordings on our website at insightsintothings.com. Now, are we ready?
Yes.
Okay, let's go. Go for Disney Detective.
So, Star Wars Rise of the Resistance has obviously been a park favorite since it opened at Disney's Hollywood Studio back in December of 2019. So, from the beginning, the ride had a virtual queue that allowed guests to enjoy other park rides while they were waiting for their boarding pass to be called. And we got to experience that when we were there last December, actually. But after the theme park closed due to COVID and then reopened in July, certain measures had to be put into place to allow for new health and safety regulations. So now Disney's Hollywood Studios are now going to allow guests with a valid theme park ticket on November 3rd to check in for a boarding pass as early as 7 a.m. from your hotel. Meanwhile, now this means that guests don't have to rush to the park to try and get a boarding pass first thing in the morning when they normally start distributing at 10 a.m. So, and then there'll be a second round of boarding groups that'll be signed at 2 p.m. But for the 2 p.m., the guests actually have to be in the park for that. And now they've actually added plexiglass dividers to the ride between the front seat and the middle seats. So now they can actually fit more people on the ride, because before they were only putting people in the front and the very back. Now they've added plexiglass so they can actually accommodate more guests, you know, on the ride. We got to, you know, like I said, we got to experience it last year. We got to the park, what, an hour and a half before the park even opened. They were letting people in the park a little early, not that you could really do anything but kind of walk around because no rides were open at the time. And we had, I think it was a 7 a.m. That you were allowed to try and get in the queue. We managed to get a spot. We didn't get on until what, about 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, I think.
About that, yeah.
But it was really nice because we got to go and do other things while we were waiting for our boarding pass. So it was kind of like having a fast pass, but different, because it didn't take away from having a fast pass for something else. Now, obviously with what going on right now, they're not doing fast passes, but it's nice that they're seeing that they have something good in place and kind of, you know, modifying it and keeping it and not getting rid of it, because we kind of thought, you know, after maybe a year they were gonna get rid of the virtual queue, but it's nice to see that it's still going, and you know, people are finding, you know, Disney's realizing that they have a good thing and, you know, to keep it going. So,
yeah. And, you know, I thought this was a brilliant move to begin with when we were down there and mm-hmm. they gave you the ability to get on it. The fact that they're extending this to people at the resorts mm-hmm. now for that early shift, I think is even better, because mm-hmm. that rush to get there right. is that huge anxiety. And within what? 15 minutes, 20 minutes, all the slots had been taken right, up at right. that point in time. So, and if, like, we were only in the park for the one day.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't get one of those slots, you really run the risk of basically not getting on that ride on your right. day in the park.
Right. And now at least they've opened it so they do two slots. So they have the early morning slot, then they do another one at 2 p.m., so at least you have another opportunity to try and get it. Or if you're just somebody that doesn't want to wake up so early to try and get it.
Or if you're not staying at the parks.
Right.
I mean, not everyone who goes to Disney
right,
stays
true.
On property.
Not everybody that stays on property. So
even
right.
those people have an opportunity to still
to try
get
and get something.
Not just reserving it for your
yeah.
resort guests,
yeah.
which is
so,
nice. It's, mm-hmm. it's a good way for Disney to do that. And honestly, I think given – I mean, even before COVID, they needed to do something with their line management. Mm-hmm. This was a great idea. With COVID, this is a brilliant fit mm-hmm. for COVID. So people are not congregating in one. Because when right. we did it, everybody was literally in the front of the park there.
Oh,
their phones
yeah,
trying
that
to get
morning,
that
you know. Yeah, now at least they're not going to have that surge of people. I'm right. sure there's still going to be people getting there first thing in the morning for
right,
those
but,
that aren't
but
staying at the park.
Park wasn't open.
Right.
Everybody was congregating
oh,
in one area, which
right.
just would not work with
right.
COVID.
Now they would have to. And that's even, and you see, if you look at pictures from the park now, because they're not doing fast pass, so you have to wait on the line for the rides. And some of the rides have, you know, half hour, 45 minute, you know, some even have about an hour. But where normally they kind of crunch you all together, now they're spacing it so far out where you're like a half a mile away yeah. from the ride. So everybody's getting their steps in, you know, more yeah. so because for like Slinky Dog, I think the wait was like 45 minutes, which really isn't bad for Slinky Dog. But because it was stretched out so far, it was all the way by the Little Mermaid show.
Well, and it doesn't make sense that they're not doing fast passes. If anything, you should exclusively do fast passes
right.
so you can regulate the line.
Yeah, that would kind of make, yeah, like, give people the option to do like four or five.
Right.
You know.
Or open up more virtual queues.
Yeah,
like
do
this.
More virtual queues. Well, and maybe
you know,
that's something.
This is a winning formula that they have that they need to be smart about. And they need
yeah,
to roll
and
out
maybe they'll, you know, they'll look at that.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But good to see it's working out yeah. and they're expanding it.
Yeah.
Tell us about the unfortunate layoffs we're looking for.
So. You know, unfortunately, within, you know, the last week, you know, we knew a couple of weeks ago, a lot of part-time employees were being part-time cast members, I should say, were being let go. And now we got news that, you know, more of the entertainment group has been let go. So at first, you know, it sounded like some of the Dapper Dans and some of the other musical groups were going to be saved. And now a lot of those cast members, as well as cast members from various shows, even the dinner shows like the Hoop-Dee-Doo Review, that they all got notifications that they have now all been laid off. Some of the others that were laid off were the Citizens of Hollywood, basically sort of Streetmosphere characters that would walk around either Main Street in the Magic Kingdom or down Hollywood Boulevard in Hollywood Studios. Also, the Beauty and the Beast live show, Finding Nemo and Friends, Festival of the Lion King, even some of the areas where you could go and meet cast members, or meet different characters like at the Laugh Floor in the Magic Kingdom. They're not going to be welcoming guests anymore. So it's definitely going to be a different feel to the park. In some areas, you can still see characters. They kind of have them in kind of like grassy areas where you can kind of wave and do kind of a selfie with, you know, with them in the background. But it's definitely going to be a very different feel. You know, you're used to going and you know, if it's something where you've never had interaction with the characters before, you've probably seen them, or even any of the music if you've never gone to the show, but you hear different musical performers, street performers as you're going by. You know, now it's, you know, pretty much there's almost no entertainment, you know, at all at this point. So
yeah,
we're very, very
this,
limited.
I think is probably the most unfortunate mm-hmm. turn that we've seen so far, because it's really, you know, you can understand if you're shutting the parks down and you have to lay people off.
Right.
But now you're taking away from what makes Disney magical.
Right.
Disney has always been that, as artificial as everything at Disney is, they strive to provide you that next level of service mm-hmm. and atmosphere.
Yeah.
And to see them start whittling away at this, you know, we talked in the last podcast about the band at the Grand Floridian.
Mm-hmm.
you know, having to let those and other musical performers go. But I think this is really what distinguishes Disney from
other theme parks. Any other theme park. Yeah.
You know, you go to a theme park to go on rides in most cases. I don't do rides, really. Right. I go for the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're whittling away here at now, and I'm assuming, I'm going to go out on a limb here, play devil's advocate, and say that they probably have a justifiable financial reason for this. But they're doing this. They're not decreasing ticket prices. So your experience at Disney is greatly diminished. And I'm curious, how many executives have been laid off during this whole thing?
Right.
I'm guessing none.
Probably not.
So you're killing what the draw is, which is going to kill your business even further, yet you still have executives making hundreds of millions of dollars a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Disney needs to get their priorities straight at this point in time.
Yeah.
I have no intention of going back down under the conditions, and I'm not talking COVID conditions. I'm talking the fact that Disney is doing everything they can to squeeze every penny out of the money that they're getting from their customers at this point in time. And it's affecting the experience at this point. I think this is probably a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're ruining the experience for the people. We go down. I mean, we've gone down 3 times in a year. We go down a lot.
Right, right.
The average family, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And you're going to rip all of this atmosphere away for someone who might go down there once, and you're going to ruin that experience for them. That's just criminal.
Mm.
And that's not even touching on the human aspect of the people that you're putting out of work. For why? What reason are they giving for these layoffs? Is it financial? Is it safety reasons? Like, what are the reasoning that they're giving for the layoff?
I'm sure it's financial at this point. You know, they know the park isn't, because they can't do it at full capacity. You know, the park's probably not making, you know, as much money. You know, they're probably still hurting from when they were closed. And you figure Disneyland is still closed. So that's a whole, you know, you have two whole parks over there.
See, and I have to question, considering the amount of money that they made when it was open at full capacity, they were printing money. You know, their margins on ticket prices and food and souvenirs, it's they have like a 300% markup on everything. So don't tell me that they're losing money. They're just not making as much money.
Right.
Because I guarantee you that Disney World would not be open if Disney wasn't making money.
You're probably right.
It's about time I swing back this way. Because, you know, I've been defending Disney in the last couple of
weeks. I know.
Weeks.
I'm very, very, so
I
very
had
surprised.
To get that out. I had to get that off my chest there. It's been building up the last few weeks.
Get it out.
So, let's talk about annual passes, because we've been annual pass holders.
Yeah.
We haven't the last year or two, but
yeah,
let's talk
so,
about the changes.
You know, with everything kind of changing, will 2020 now mark the end of annual passes for Disneyland and Walt Disney World? So Tokyo Disney actually had announced that at least for now, the park is ending its annual pass program entirely. Previously, was the case with the Stateside Park, guests who had annual passes had the expiration of those passes extend to a future date equivalent to the amount of time that the parks were closed due to the pandemic. However, now that the extension has been canceled and guests with annual passes need to simply apply for refunds, we could actually see that maybe the annual passes don't return at all, or maybe turn into something else. Now, just, you know, in case you're not aware, Tokyo Disney Resort is not actually owned or operated by the Walt Disney Company. So the change in policy is not a Disney policy. It's just specific to that park. But it could be something that the other parks stateside actually might consider doing. And obviously, it's a simple fact and kind of touching on what you just kind of mentioned, is that guests with annual passes don't spend as much money as guests that use a standard ticket. While the income from the pass itself is obviously valuable, guests that go to Disneyland or Walt Disney World with an annual pass aren't going and getting all that merchandise every time that they go. They're not buying meals every time they go. You know, a lot of the people that are very local might just go for a couple of hours just to walk around and then head home, whereas other people that go, again, multiple times a year because they know they're going to be back, well, I don't need to eat at this place. I'll just get fast food, or, you know, I don't need to buy the merchandise because I already have that, versus somebody who's only there that once in a lifetime or once every few year trip. So kind of interesting to see what they end up, you know, doing with that. Is it something where they kind of consider it? Now, the other thing too is that Tokyo, along with Disneyland in California, are very much more of a locals park. So they do tend to have a lot more people that have annual passes. So if you get rid of the annual pass, how is that going to affect your overall attendance? Are you even going to have as much attendance as you normally would without it? Or do you create something else, you know, not an annual pass, but something a little different to kind of entice those local people? I know with Florida, they have variations of annual passes. They have a strictly after four Epcot pass, or they have the various ones that have the blackout dates, and things like that. And the other thing too is, how does that affect, because right now you need to make a reservation for the park. So if you're staying at the resorts, you have to actually specify which park you're going to go in on what day, because there's no park hopping or whatnot. And then the same thing if you're an annual pass holder, if you're not staying on property, you have to go and make a reservation. And that's probably going to be the case for a while. So I could see where they kind of phase out the annual passes for now, because I know there's been some changes to the policies, and a lot of people aren't renewing them as of now because they don't like the policy changes that have been coming into place. So maybe it's something they just kind of.
So is Disneyland Tokyo open right now?
Yes, I believe they still are.
Okay. So they're open. They're doing away. They're giving refunds for anyone who had, I guess, the prorated refunds for whatever time you had.
Right, right.
Okay. And are they doing reservations at that point in time?
I believe they are still do. I think all of the parks, you have to have a reservation.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the advantage of annual passes to Disney is the recurring revenue they can, mm-hmm. they can book. They,
right.
You know, they know they're getting it.
Right.
And while you may have people like, you know, my boss out in California, you know, they don't get their annual passes to Disneyland every year. They may skip a year here and there and get something else.
Right.
But when they have them, that's exactly what they do. They may go out there because they're not that far from mm-hmm. the park. They may just head over for lunch and eat lunch over there. Mm-hmm. Or they may take a walk after dinner over there or something like that.
Right.
Just for the ambiance.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to say that they're not booking as much money off of those people is probably not that accurate, because you might not be doing it per trip. But I think if you look at it over the course of a year or multiple right. years, they're spending more than the family that goes there once a year.
I could see that.
Once in a lifetime thing.
Yeah, I could see that.
Plus, they're the people that are probably buying the higher end merchandise, staying at the higher end resort hotels that you have there. You know, they're the ones that are eating at the higher end restaurants. You know, they're
right, because they know about them
right.
more,
you know,
so
they're
than
the insiders.
The
right.
Yeah,
they're not the
I could
people
see
that are going and staying at All Stars and eating, you know, quick serve because they've, you know, they're trying to do it on a budget.
Right, right.
These are people that, you know, it's just like eating at a local restaurant for us.
Yeah, I could see that.
So I think if they do away with it, it's gonna really hurt business, and it's gonna hurt the fans.
Yeah.
it looks like Disney was making all the right decisions early on in this pandemic, and it looks like almost desperation now where they're making decisions that are more business-centric and less customer-centric. Mm. And ultimately, in the long run, that's going to cost you. Even Disney's brand can erode.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen that happen in the 80s, mm-hmm. where they allowed the brand to erode. So
yeah.
If they're not smart and they don't play the right game, then they're going to lose more money in the long run.
Yeah.
Speaking of losing money, what happened to Disneyland Paris?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, French authorities had made a decision, because they're having spikes in COVID cases, that Disneyland Paris actually closed at the end of day on October 29th. They were actually getting ready to start doing their Christmas season, and they actually had posted a note saying that, in anticipation of celebrating the Christmas holiday season, we will be taking reservations from December 19th to January 3rd and hope to be opened based on prevailing conditions and government guidance at that time. Disneyland Paris will be closed from January 4th through February 12th. Please check back on the website for regular updates. If you have a booking with us during the above-mentioned period, please check here for our latest commercial conditions. And they had a link available. So they had opened up. Things seemed to be going okay. And just in general, you know, the country started seeing spikes. So it was mandated for, you know, parks and other things to close. So they are hoping to be open, you know, for a couple of weeks for Christmas, then close back again for about a month and a half, and hoping that by February things can be a little normal again.
Now, this is by government mandated. This mm-hmm. this isn't just mm-hmm. Disney deciding.
No.
From an overabundance of caution.
Right. Yeah. This is the government. So.
Right. So there's not much. It's like California. There mm-hmm. isn't much they can do.
Right.
We do know that the state representatives from California had gone to Florida.
Right. To kind of see.
To look at the methods that were being done at the theme parks there. Yeah. Nothing's come of that mm-mm. so far as yeah. announcements or anything. But should California decide to adopt some of those and reopen, it might be an influence on France as yeah. well. But again, you know, they're basically closing down along medical guidelines at this point for quarantine right. situations.
Now, they had announced that some of California Adventure was going to be opening, but kind of along the lines of Knott's Berry Farms, where it's just the food and shopping area. So along with Disney Springs, which is their shopping district, they are going to be opening parts of the park as well. But again, just for shopping, just for dining, you won't need a ticket. I don't know if you're going to need a reservation for it. So, you know, they're starting to open up a little bit. But again, it's not the rides. It's not right. both parks. It's just a little section of it.
It's something.
But it's
right?
something.
It's something.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can stick to their schedule and reopen and do it safe.
Yeah, there was kind of after the whole thing with Paris, there was a separate article on one of the business websites that said, you know, could California actually open before Paris opens back up? You know, because right now there's no time frame, yeah. you know, for California. At least Paris has some kind of a...
Right, right.
An end at the tunnel, so.
Well, hopefully we'll start getting back to normal or some sense of normal soon.
Yeah.
So, but that was all we had for our Disney Detective. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with our Tales from the Edge of the Galaxy. For 7 years, the Second Sith Empire has been the premier community guild in the online game Star Wars: The Old Republic. With hundreds of friendly and helpful active members, a weekly schedule of nightly events, annual guild meet and greets, and an active community both on the web and on Discord. The Second Sith Empire is more than your typical gaming group. We're family. Join us on the StarForge server for nightly events such as operations, flashpoints, world boss hunts, Star Wars trivia, guild lottery, and much more. Visit us on the web today at www.thesecondsithempire.com. Go for Tales from the Edge of the Galaxy.
Pew, pew, pew,
it's
pew.
Not pew, pew.
I know. So, the Star Wars Holiday Special is coming to Disney Plus the end of next month, and it's obviously very unlike the original of the same name, and this actually sounds like it won't scar us for life, hopefully. So talking to Entertainment Weekly, the executive producer had said, "The Holiday Special has something you will never see in Star Wars otherwise, which is all of the characters from across all timelines kind of crashing in together. Normally, story groups are so concerned about maintaining this amazing galaxy so that it feels cohesive, and it was liberating to do this in a way that was charming and fun." So it's kind of like if you've ever played any of the Star Wars Lego games where you can kind of mix up your characters while you're playing the game. This is kind of going to be the same thing for the holiday special. So currently confirmed is that Rey will be fighting her grandfather's former apprentice, Darth Vader, in one scene, while all three eras of Obi-Wan, presumably Padawan, Bearded Ear, Ewan McGregor, and Alec Guinness, are all featured in a scene together. So that's going to be kind of cool to have all of them.
It'll be like, you know, a Doctor Who special.
I was just going to say it's a Doctor Who special with all the different doctors. So the Star Wars Holiday Special will take place following the events of Star Wars Rise of Skywalker, Life Day, which is the one remaining thread from the original holiday special, will kind of be, you know, celebrated. And Rey ends up in a Jedi temple that pushes her back in time and experiencing several iconic moments. So that's...
Are we going to see Wookiees in red dresses, though?
I don't know. It did not say.
Because that holiday special had some compelling dialogue.
Yeah, that was really it. So we don't have a long wait. The Star Wars Holiday Special will be airing on November 17th, obviously only on Disney Plus. So not too long to wait because it's already the 31st of, oh my God, it's the 31st of Blursville.
Yeah. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary. Oh, look at that. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it should be fun. Should be fun. Tell us about the Mando.
So, obviously, we are now negative one day from the airing of season two of The Mandalorian. We happened to watch it last night, and it was fantastic. It was everything we wanted it to be, and even more. We did even catch... later on in the evening, they had a virtual red carpet event, that was, streaming on Twitter. We actually, you know, caught that, as well. So that was kind of cool to see. Giancarlo Esposito was actually, talking, it was Good Morning America. He was being interviewed and talking about his character, you know, making such a memorable appearance in the first season and what could, you know, we look forward to, you know, for season two. And he said that his character is kind of the warden of the galaxy. He's a remnant of the Imperial Empire and that he's still searching for his quarry, which, you know, that we kind of hope that he'll find. He said he's, you know, so happy to be part of that show that really depicts a story about humanity and heroism. And he says that, you know, he's played different villains, but he really loves you know, playing this character because he thinks in a lot of cases he's a hero of, you know, the galaxy. He says that, you know, Star Wars is iconic. And as we've heard him mention before, you know, would I have rather have been in a movie or the television show? And he says that he thinks he totally made the right choice because, you know, for him, it's just an empowering moment being in The Mandalorian, you know, where we are right now. So we didn't get to see him in, you know, this first episode, but I'm sure he's going to be, you know, making his appearance at some point within the season. So,
yeah. And it's kind of cool, the character that he plays, because the time span from Return of the Jedi to Force Awakens, something happens.
Right.
You know, the Empire's not there, but the First Order rises. So there's some type of transitionary period here. And we're a few years after Return of the Jedi here, and we see that the Empire still kind of exists.
Mm-hmm.
So what's really cool is he's going to sort of bridge part of that gap for us,
mm-hmm.
and kind of put us on our path to where the First Order rises. So a very cool transitionary thing that we're looking at here.
And he has a cool weapon.
And he does have a cool weapon, which
hint,
I have
hint, nudge,
now
nudge.
Too, because the best wife in the world got it for me for our anniversary. I didn't bring it up. We should have brought it
up. You should have, along with your other Star Wars-y stuff.
Yeah, I got a lot of Star Wars stuff today.
Because somebody loves you.
Yes. Yes, someone does. And when I figure out who it is, I'm going to let them know what I think.
You give them a piece of your mind.
That was all we had for our Tales from the Edge of the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. We'll be back in a minute with our entertainment news of the week.
Insights into Teens, a podcast series exploring the issues and challenges of today's youth. Talking to real teens about real teen problems. Explore issues from braces to puberty, social anxiety to financial responsibility. Each week, we talk about the topics concerning today's youth. We look at how the issues affect teens, how to cope with these issues, and how parents, friends, and loved ones can help teens handle these challenges. Check out our video episodes on youtube.com/insightsintothings. Catch our audio versions on podcast.insightsintoteens.com. On the web at insightsintothings.com.
Go for entertainment news.
So Marvel might be retconning the MCU to accommodate the X-Men. So characters of Wanda and Pietro were introduced in the Marvel Cinematic Universe in Avengers Age of Ultron. Obviously, if you haven't seen it, spoilers, Wanda was the only one that made it out alive. Since then, she's obviously gone to have an important role in the franchise and is actually going to be part of her own show, WandaVision, which will be airing in December on Disney Plus. But there's always been kind of something weird. So Wanda and her brother are technically from the X-Men comics because they're mutants. Pietro has the mutant ability to run really fast, and Wanda has the ability to control probability. So far, Marvel could never say that they were mutants in the movies because 20th Century Fox had the film rights to X-Men. But now Disney obviously owns 20th Century Fox, so it's only a matter of time between Wolverine, Cyclops, and Jean Grey to be introduced into the MCU. So obviously, where does that leave Wanda? She's been a mutant this whole time, or will Marvel stick with their original explanation that she and her brother gained their powers after being exposed to the Mind Stone in Loki's scepter? Well, it looks like the studio may have found a middle path. So there is a new excuse me, in-universe book out called The Wakanda Files. And it's a exploration of the Avengers and beyond. And it's comprised of notes on all things Marvel lore, which is supposed to be compiled by Black Panther's sister, Shuri. And it has some interesting notes about the siblings. One such note comes from Baron von Strucker, who did experiments involving the Mind Stone on human test subjects, although Wanda and her brother were the only ones who survived. Strucker notes that the twins had the appropriate genetic marker that makes them conducive for human trial volunteers. So that was kind of how they slipped it in. So are they going to stick with that, or are they going to kind of fish it around and bring in, you know, other mutants, calling them mutants or other things? So maybe we'll find out a little bit more once WandaVision, you know, drops in December. So,
and you know, it's kind of hard to think why you kind of need to go that route. You know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe right now is huge. Mm-hmm. If you add, I mean, they're talking, we're talking about adding Spider-Man in, you know, on a regular basis. You're mm-hmm. talking about bringing the X-Men universe into it. I think considering the path that they went down, you could conceivably from a story standpoint say that. But you also have to look at what else they've done. You know, they in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
mm-hmm.
we got the Inhumans who have the right. genetic marker for the transgenesis.
True.
You know, so there's all kinds of directions that they can go with this. Honestly, I think if they go the route, since you already killed off Quicksilver,
mm-hmm.
I think you probably are safer going off and keeping her as a separate character in the MCU and sticking to that storyline. But it should be interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good to know they've got options now, right?
Right.
Where, you know, 10 years ago, we were all itching to see these crossovers and everything else,
right,
and they just couldn't do it because of licensing.
Right.
Marvel really did a mess of a job with their licensing for movies.
Yeah. You know, can have these three, you can have these guys, and you can have these guys, but none of us will ever talk together. Yeah, so.
Had they been smarter, you know, kind of like Disney was with, Star Wars was with their licensing.
Yeah.
They retained all the licensing rights, and they basically leased those licensing rights out to booksellers and game makers and software developers. But ultimately, Lucas still owned everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame that Marvel didn't do that because it would have cleaned this up a lot quicker.
Right. But then maybe it wouldn't have been, I don't know, maybe because some of the Marvel stuff that came out from other areas wasn't as good.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I wonder if you would have gotten that same quality.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it kind of needed, you know, I don't know. Or maybe if it was in the right hand, it could have been better from the beginning.
And remember, we didn't really get the quality stuff until Disney acquired Marvel.
Yeah, true.
So had Marvel stuck to the Lucas model and just licensed their stuff out, when Disney got it, they would have gotten the entire thing with
which
would have just been a much cleaner transition.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, let's talk about Spider-Man and muddy the waters even more.
Since we were talking about Spider-Man, so obviously Tom Holland has had a very successful run at Spider-Man. He debuted in Captain America Civil War. Then we had, you know, the Spider-Man Homecoming and Spider-Man Far From Home. He was also in Infinity Wars and Endgame. And then we had all this, you know, problems between Sony and Marvel Studios because, again, of the licensing issues. So, again, we were hoping that, you know, a new Spider-Man was going to come out. Then we weren't sure if it was. So now it seems that Spider-Man 3 is on the table again. Originally, it was going to be coming out in July of 2021. Then it got moved to November. And now we actually have a December 17th, 2021 date. So at least it's something for next year. It's just obviously pushed out later. Last Sunday, Tom Holland had actually posted an Instagram story in which he revealed that filming of Spider-Man 3 was a go and that he had just landed on location in Atlanta, Georgia. And he had said, okay, so we just landed in Atlanta. It's time for Spider-Man 3. Let's go. So, of course, very exciting news that, you know, he's back to work and that filming has started. Some more information has been coming out about the movie and that we learned that Doctor Strange will be making an appearance, and that also a shocking comeback for Jamie Foxx's Electro, who actually last faced Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man in The Amazing Spider-Man 2, will be making an appearance. So now this has a couple of fans maybe speculating that Spider-Man 3 might actually be a live-action version, Spider-Verse version, that maybe Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire maybe would be joining, possibly, in this movie. So again, a lot of speculation on that part of it, but kind of cool that there's going to be some other, you know, crossover characters in this episode. So unfortunately, again, a little bit of a delay for this one, but this will be next December of 2021 for this one.
And that's exciting news. You know, mm-hmm. the prospect that it could be a crossover, you know, an Into the Spider-Verse type thing. It'd be a great intro for the Miles Morales character. Mm-hmm. And still allow you to keep your, you know, the Spider-Man that you like, right? Because everyone seems just like...
Everybody has a Spider-Man they like,
just like James Bond and Doctor Who. Everyone has their favorite Spider-Man.
Right, right.
So that'll be kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of James Bond...
Not yet.
We'll get to that. But before that, we have other bad news to talk about.
Yeah, so one of our favorite shows from Netflix is Mindhunter, and they had two seasons on Netflix. Originally, they had been talking about a season three, and now it seems that it isn't going to be happening, at least as of now. So the producer and director delivered the sad news, but it wasn't kind of, you know... It was kind of not unexpected. He was actually being interviewed talking about his upcoming Netflix film, The Mank. And he mentioned that he had decided to make The Mank after exhausting years spending... he was exhausted after spending so much time making the first two seasons of Mindhunter. He said, "We had done the first two seasons of Mindhunter without a showrunner, with me pinch hitting on a week by week basis. We started getting scripts for the second season and I ended up looking at what was written and decided I can't take any of it. So we tossed it and started all over again." Then he brought in some people to kind of help him, you know, write it, and ended up doing, you know, some co-show running. But it ended up being a 90-hour work week, and it absorbs everything in your life. And he said when he got done, he was pretty much exhausted. And he said, "I don't know if I could, you know, do a third season at this point." So rather than fighting for another season, he said that Netflix executives asked him if they would rather, you know, what he rather work on. And that's when this new movie that he's working on, The Mank, kind of came to be. He said, "Listen, for the viewership that it had, it was an expensive show. We talked about finish Mank and then see how you feel, but I honestly don't think that we're going to be able to do it for less than what I did season two for. And on the same level, you have to be realistic about dollars having equal eyeballs." So, I don't know, maybe it'll be something in a couple of years, you know, he decides to go back and finish it, or maybe, you know, a different producer comes in and you know, takes it, because that's, you know, happened before with various shows that still had a following, you know, but they kind of changed, you know, changed
it's
hands.
It's unfortunate. It was a very well-written show, mm-hmm. incredibly subliminal, mm-hmm. And incredibly well-acted and mm-hmm. produced. Well, if it doesn't come back, it'll be missed. It'd be nice if it came back, though.
Yeah, yeah.
So now...
Yeah, so this morning news broke that the Scottish actor, best known for his portrayal of James Bond, being the first to bring the role to the big screen and appearing in 7 of the spy thrillers, has passed away. Sean Connery died peacefully in his sleep in the Bahamas, having been unwell for some time, his son had said. His acting career spanned 5 decades, and he won an Oscar in 1988 for his role in The Untouchables. Sean's other films included your favorite, The Hunt for Red October.
One ping only, Vasily.
Highlander.
There can be only one.
Indiana Jones of the Last Crusade.
Signs? What? Oh, no, sorry. That was a different movie.
And The Rock.
We named the dog Indiana.
There you go. See, I knew you wouldn't disappoint. His son had said that his father had had many of his family who could be in the Bahamas around him when he died overnight in Nassau. Much of the Bond film Thunderball had actually been filmed there. He said, "We are all working at understanding this huge event as it only happened so recently, even though my dad had been unwell for some time. Sad day for all who knew and loved my dad, and a sad loss for all the people around the world who enjoyed the wonderful gift he had had as an actor." His publicist had said that there would be a private ceremony followed by a memorial, yet to be planned once, obviously, the virus had had ended, and he leaves behind a wife and 2 sons.
That is unfortunate. He was one of my favorite actors of all time.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those people that could slip into just about any role and pull it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which he proved when he was in The Rock, because that was so out of character for
him. Yeah, it really was.
So he will be missed.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And that is all we had for entertainment news. We'll be back in a moment with our insightful picks of the week. Go for your insightful pick.
So my insightful pick of the week is definitely a themed for this season. It is Eli Roth's History of Horror. There are 2 seasons. The current season on AMC is season 2. There have been 3 episodes so far in this season. And season 1, you can actually find it on Amazon, but you actually have to, it's not part of Amazon Prime. You actually have to pay for the episodes or have some sort of add-on to be able to watch them, because I was going to try and go back and watch some of the older ones. So that kind of stunk. But anyway, so Masters of Horror, icons and stars who define the genre, join writer, producer, director Eli Roth to explore horror's biggest themes and reveal the inspirations and struggles behind its past and present. Each episode is an hour long, and it features A-list storytellers like Stephen King, Quentin Tarantino, Jordan Peele, Jason Blum, Robert Engel, Linda Blair, Rob Zombie, Jack Black, John Landis, and Jamie Lee Curtis, who discuss how horror has evolved through the years and impacted society, as well as how the genre remains its fan base and why audiences are addicted to fear. What's really cool is each episode is a different theme. So one, they talked about just haunted houses and just how the house itself in certain movies was the main character and how it made you feel. And, you know, the houses that looked nice and pristine, but yet had a dark secret to it versus, you know, the houses that as soon as you looked at it, you knew it was a haunted house. So really kind of interesting. And again, they show these scenes of movies and they talk about them. And then they talk with not only, people that made the movies or people that starred in the movies or wrote the movies, you know, but they give you a different perspective, you know, on it. And they even give you, you know, some little backstories that you might not have known, how, you know, this one was paying homage to this one, and this one was kind of this, and, you know, they even talk about how certain films, when they came out, you know, tanked, but then ended up getting a cult following later on, and, or, you know, who was kind of pushing the boundaries of this, and, you know, why we like to be scared. So really interesting. It does get gory, so it's definitely not something, you know, for the kids to watch, because they do show you, you know, some gory scenes. But if you're into horror and like that genre, it's a very interesting documentary, to watch.
Cool pick.
Thank you.
So my pick this week is a documentary, but it is themed to the season, but not to Halloween. It's themed more to the political season. My pick is a documentary called Why We Fight on Amazon Prime. Winner of the 2005 Grand Jury Prize at the Sundance Film Festival, Eugene Jakecki's groundbreaking documentary dissects the political, economic, and historic reasons behind our increasingly aggressive military strategy since the end of World War II. Fans of Oliver Stone's JFK will recognize the opening moments of writer-director Eugene Jakecki's Why We
Sure.
in which outgoing President Dwight Eisenhower warns of the pernicious and growing influence of what he called the, quote, military-industrial complex. But Stone's movie, which uses the same footage, was a work of fiction. While those who disagree with the decidedly leftist point of view in this documentary will probably consider the product of a paranoid liberal fantasy as well, there's enough credible material, much of it supplied by the targets of Jarecki's criticisms, to make Eisenhower look like a prophet and everyone else uneasy about the dark confluence of politics, money, and war that controls the country's fortunes. The message here is that while there may be some who sincerely believe that America's various military engagements in Iraq, Vietnam, Grenada, Panama, and elsewhere since World War II are the product of our God-given duty to spread freedom and halt the influence of evil ideologies around the world, the real reason we fight is that war is good for business. And that is the sad reality of it. We'll be back in a minute. So that is all we have for today.
Sure is.
Did you have any afterthoughts?
I love you.
I love you too, sweetheart. in that case, let's just finish up some quick business here. We are publishing now live on, well, not now live.
Not right now.
I'm not actually publishing right now, but we do publish long form articles on Medium at medium.com/insights into things. Again, we implore you to subscribe to the podcast. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, iHeart Radio, TuneIn, and Amazon. Again, our videos are listed as Insights into Things. Our audio is listed as Insights into Entertainment. We do stream on Twitch 6 days a week at twitch.tv/insightsintothings. If you are an Amazon Prime member, you do get a free Twitch Prime subscription monthly that you can throw our way, which helps us out tremendously. Or you can reach out to us via email at comments@insightsintothings.com.
On Twitter at @insights_things.
We are on Facebook at facebook.com/insightsintothingspodcast.
We're also on Instagram at instagram.com/insightsintothings.
Audio versions of the podcast can be found at podcast.insightsintoentertainment.com.
Or for all of our videos, including Insights into Teens and Insights into Tomorrow, you can go to youtube.com/insightsintothings.
Or you can get links to all that, plus show notes, transcriptions, and profiles of the show hosts on our website at insightsintothings.com. And I think that's it.
I think it is.
Another one in the book.
Have a good week, everyone.
Bye, and happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. I'm not the one who's always right.